Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question and answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star then one on your touch-tone phone to ask a question. I would like to inform all parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Brady Phillips. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Kurt. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the monthly climate call. And this is part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. Again, I'm Brady Phillips with NOAA's Communications in Washington, D.C., and I'll be facilitating the call today. So today we'll have three short presentations followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. And we will be following along with a PowerPoint presentation that you can download at http://www.ncdc.noaa.gov/sotc/briefings. That's B-R-I-E-F-I-N-G-S. Our first presenter today is Jay Crouch, a climate scientist at NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information in Asheville. Will provide us a summary of the April U.S. and global climate reports and the drought monitor, which was just released today. Our next presenter will be Patrick Gannon, the Missouri State climatologist located at the University of Missouri in Columbia, who will discuss the recent heavy rainfall and flooding in the mid-Mississippi River Valley. And our final presenter is Stephen Baxter, a meteorologist and seasonal forecaster at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center in College Park, Maryland, who will provide the latest El Nino update as well as the monthly and seasonal temperature, precipitation, and drought outlooks over the coming 3 months. So that's through the end of August. Our first speaker will be Jake Crouch from NOAA. Jake?
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us. I'm going to start speaking to slide number 2 on the slide deck you can download, talking to our global report for April 2017 that was released just a few moments ago. April 2017 ranked as the second warmest April on record when we look at global temperatures over land and ocean surfaces. The global temperature was 0.9 degrees Celsius above average, and this was the 388th consecutive month that we've seen above average temperatures for the global surface. The last cooler than average month for the global surface occurred in December 1984. Land surfaces across the globe had their fourth warmest April. While much of the warmth during the month occurred over ocean surfaces, and the ocean surface saw its second warmest April on record. The graphic on the right on slide number 2 shows how these temperatures broke down during the month. Areas in the darkest red indicate locations that were record warm. If you notice, almost every single ocean basin had parts of the had regions that were record warm during the month. We did see some below average temperatures. Of note, what were in Central and Eastern Europe. Austria saw its coldest April since 2013, and the continent as a whole saw its coldest April since 2003. We did see above-average temperatures across parts of Far East Russia, much of Africa, Northern South America, as well as Alaska. Moving on to slide number 3 to look at year-to-date temperatures. This is a horse race graphic showing 2016 in the black line compared to our other warmest years on record for the globe. So far for 2017, the year-to-date is ranking as the second warmest on record with a temperature departure from average of 0.95 degrees Celsius. We can see there 2016, which ended up being the record warmest year for the globe, is still quite a bit warmer than we were at this point in 2017, but 2017 continues safely in second warmest year-to-date so far. Moving on to slide number 4 to look at what happened here in the contiguous U.S. during April. It was warmer than average, particularly across the eastern U.S. Colder than average conditions were observed across the northwest. Parts of the mid-Atlantic and Midwest saw record warm temperatures, where numerous states, Delaware, Maryland, New Jersey, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Virginia, as well as the district, saw their warmest April on record. In terms of precipitation, it was a very wet month across the contiguous U.S. It was the second wettest on April and our wettest April in about 50 years for the lower 48. Areas of above average precipitation were observed across the Northwest, Northern Rockies, the Central Plains into the Midwest and Mid-Mississippi River Valley, as well as the Mid-Atlantic. North Carolina had its wettest April on record. You can also notice the graphic on the right shows record and near record precipitation across the Mid-Mississippi River Valley, which Pat will speak to in a moment. The wet month resulted in a dramatic decrease in the percent area of drought in the U.S. And in terms of the U.S. Drought Monitor, which I'll also speak about in a moment, we saw the lowest drought footprint since the Drought Monitor began in 2000. Moving on to slide number 5 to look at year-to-date temperatures for the contiguous U.S. The average temperature across the lower 48 ranked as the second warmest on record. A lot of that warmth was situated across the eastern U.S., from the southwest through the Rockies, and most locations from the Great Plains to the East Coast saw above-average temperatures with record warmth across much of the southern tier into the southeast, mid-Atlantic, and Midwest. Numerous states, 14 states, in fact, were record warm for the year-to-date, and only January to April 2012 was warmer than this same period in 2017. The graphic on the right shows a time series of contiguous U.S. temperatures for January through April, back to 1895 when our period of record begins. We can see where 2017 at the end of the time series fits into this historical context. So we're still quite a bit below where we were in 2012, but we're quite a bit above every other year in our period of record. Moving on to slide number 6 to speak to the U.S. Drought Monitor that was released this morning. 5.6% of the contiguous U.S. is in drought, and this is down about 8.6% compared to the end of March. We did see dramatic drought improvement across the central and southern plains, the Mid-Mississippi River Valley, the interior southeast, and the northeast. The drought percentage did drop below 5% earlier in the month, and as I mentioned, that was the lowest drought footprint in the history of the U.S. Drought Monitor. We did see drought conditions get worse in parts of the southwest, as well as southern Georgia and Florida, where numerous large wildfires have burned over the past couple of months. It's been very dry and very hot in that part of the country, so as we move into the summer, it's going to be important to monitor the conditions in that part of the U.S. Outside of the lower 48, we did see a drought improvement and abnormal dryness improvement across parts of Hawaii as well as Puerto Rico. And with that, I will pass it off to Pat.
Thank you, Jake. Good morning, everyone. We'll refer now to slide number 7. Talk a little bit about the major flood event that impacted the Mid-Mississippi River Valley area back in at the end of April, first part of May. I'd like to set the stage, though, in regard to the forecast of this extreme precipitation event. It was a very well-forecasted event. The image on slide number 7 shows a 48-hour forecast that was issued just prior to the event by the NOAA's Weather Prediction Center, indicating some incredible amounts of rainfall over a 48-hour period. Anything you see in the orange and various shades of browns across southwest Illinois, southern Missouri, on into northern Arkansas, and northeast Oklahoma are anywhere from 5 to a little over 8 inches of rain forecasted for that 48-hour period at the end of April. It was the last weekend of April. Just to provide a little bit of context, here in southern Missouri, we typically climatologically experience about a little over 4 inches of rain for the entire month of April, and yet they were calling for more than twice that amount just over a 48-hour period. The next slide, number 8, is actually what happened according to the rainfall from radar estimates and from weather station observers across the Mid-Mississippi Valley area. It was two strong storm systems that impacted the region, but it was that first storm event at the end of April that really brought the majority of rainfall across the area and contributed to the major flooding. You can see some of the totals that actually fell. Again, it was a very well-forecasted event, anywhere from 4 to as much as 10 inches of rain. There's a corridor of 8 to 10 inches of rain from southwest Missouri, south-central parts of the state, on eastward into southern Illinois and southern Indiana. And obviously that led to some major flooding. We were fortunate in some regard because of the forecasted amount of precipitation. We were very proactive in regard to some campgrounds were evacuated prior to the event, knowing that if it occurred, there was going to be some major flooding ongoing. The next slide is slide number 9. Just to provide just how, you know, all that rain that fell over a short period of time across southern Missouri and on and over into southern Indiana and parts of northern Arkansas. Here in Missouri, these are some stream gauges across the southern parts of the state. Any purple dot that you see is indicative of major ongoing flooding, and this was a snapshot from May 1st. And along the periphery of this map, I've posted a lot of hydrographs from various rivers with lines going to each of those stream gauges. And all these hydrographs, they broke records. And so many rivers in the southern parts of the state broke stream flow records, and some of them were some long-standing records, like along the Current River in southeastern Missouri. They broke a record on the Jacks Fork and Current River that was stood back to 1904, so over 100 years of records, and it was broken by that weekend event. The next image, I'd like to provide a little bit of context on this major event, major flood event. You know, it's tempting to call it historic, but I can find similar events in regard to the region affected, the amount of precipitation that fell, and the length of the event. There have been four other events within the past decade. You can go back to March, a five-day period back in March of 2008. Again, those totals in the upper left, you can see were anywhere from 5 to more than 10 inches of rain across much of the same area that we saw back at the end of April. Number two was another event back in April of 2011. Again, less than a week, we saw 5 to 10, 12 inches of rain falling over southern Missouri, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, northern Arkansas. Number three, just less than 2 years ago, just after Christmas, another weekend extreme event that impacted southern Missouri, parts of Illinois, northeast Oklahoma, northern Arkansas, again with 5 to as much as 8, 10 inches of rain. And then, of course, what we saw at the end of April. So it was historic perhaps for a few locations, but overall what we're seeing, we've seen 4 of these major precipitation events over the past decade. Slide number 11, of course, with all that rain falling over a short period of time over a lot of real estate, we saw a lot of impacts. In the upper left of the slide, you'll see a map from the Missouri Department of Transportation, a snapshot on May 4th. And looking across the southern half of Missouri, any circle that you see that's half red and half white is indicative of roads that were closed. And there was at one time nearly 300 roads across Missouri that were closed due to this flash flood event, very notable flood event, including some major interstates, I-44, I-55. We saw a lot of traffic issues, especially around St. Louis during this time, because of the significant rainfall. Other impacts, of course, there was significant damage to infrastructure across Missouri, Arkansas, Illinois, and Indiana. Many reports of washed out roads and bridges, levees that failed, and of course, unfortunately, communities where we saw many flooded homes and businesses. Farmland, agriculture took a pretty big hit as well. We saw millions of acres of flooded bottomland, millions of dollars of damage to row crops, pastures, orchards, sod farms, fruit and vegetable producers, community-supported agriculture co-ops were impacted, and on. So a lot of impacts across the region due to this significant rain event. There is an opportunity. We've actually had a couple weeks of drier weather across Missouri, and agriculture, of course, a lot of replanting going on. This time of year, there still is some time to get the corn and soybean crop in, and so that has provided, at least the warmer, drier weather recently has provided that opportunity for farmers to get back in the field and replant. Unfortunately, there were a lot of casualties associated with this extreme event. We saw hundreds of water rescues in the 4-state area, evacuations, and sadly, 12 fatalities. What I've noted in most, they were in Missouri and Illinois. We actually saw 7 fatalities in Arkansas, 5 in Missouri, And sadly, most of them were related to low water crossings and cars traversing the roadways that led to these fatalities. And then at the bottom of the slide, you'll see some pictures, just some of the impacts visually across Illinois and Arkansas, Missouri, and Indiana. So that's pretty much a wrap-up of the flood event across the mid-Mississippi River Valley. I'll pass the baton over to Stephen right now.
Oh, great. Great, Patrick. Thanks a lot. This is Steve Baxter at CPC. We're picking up here on slide 12. The two graphics on the left, the top left shows the last month's average sea surface temperature anomalies over the global domain. And we'll start with that figure here. And one thing that's evidently noticeable here is above normal sea surface temperatures in the eastern equatorial Pacific off the coast of South America. It's actually been an important climate driver for parts of South America over the past 1 to 2 months. Those now extend westward across much of the Pacific Basin. The below normal sea surface temperatures across the Central Pacific associated with last winter season's weak La Nina conditions has now entirely reversed, and the subsurface is also above normal, so everything has transitioned away from La Nina in that context. Away from the equator, above normal sea surface temperatures extend across the subtropical Pacific Ocean, and just off the eastern seaboard, there's notable positive anomalies as well. Interestingly, now the below normal sea surface temperatures extend across the mid-latitude Pacific between 30 and 45 north toward the west coast of North America. If you were to zoom in on this with a little bit higher resolution graphic, you'd see that the cold sea surface temperatures don't yet extend entirely to the west coast, but these North Pacific sea surface temperatures are largely driven by the circulation, at least on shorter timescales, by the circulation, the atmospheric circulation in the North Pacific. So in some ways, it acts as a tracer for looking at how the atmosphere has been evolving over the past couple of months. So the summary from this figure is that ENSO neutral conditions are present. In terms of the El Niño slowed oscillation forecast, ENSO neutral and El Niño are now equally likely at about 45% probability apiece from meteorological summer, June, July, August, to the end of the outlook period, which is now meteorological winter, December, January, February 2017, 2018. And that's what that figure down there on the lower left shows, and a repeat of La Nina remains unlikely. Compared to last month, probability of El Nino has actually, in this setting, ticked down just a slight bit. A couple of the dynamical computer models really backed off on the probability of El Nino. NOAA's own climate forecast system was been the most prominent model that really flipped fairly dramatically from an ENSO, a strong El Nino, moderate to strong El Nino forecast, back to near neutral, and that had some bearing on the forecast. That being said, El Nino, especially relative to La Nina, is still the favorite outcome for the upcoming winter, so something in the warm neutral territory is highly likely at this point. Moving on to the monthly forecast for June, now on slide 13, the left figure here is the temperature probabilities, precipice on the right. So for temperature, you can see this kind of horseshoe pattern around the contiguous U.S. and continuing up the west coast of North America into western Alaska. And this is very characteristic of the decadal trend that we observe, especially in the warm season. And there's a very large weakness across the central U.S., parts of the northern U.S., and this includes an area of below normal temperatures being favored now along and just east of the Continental Divide. A lot of that's based on the latest numerical guidance, the dynamical model guidance, but it's also based on some statistical considerations given the very impressive soil moisture anomalies across parts of the north central U.S., as well as